You're going to be rude? Come on. Good morning. Hi, I'm Steve Grossbart. I'm the Chief Quality Officer at Catholic Health Partners, and Catholic Health Partners is co-sponsoring today's meeting with Premier. I'm going to introduce an introducer, and then we're going to get going with our program. But I'd like to thank Premier for all the support around this today's meeting. Just to give you some background for those of you who are not part of Catholic Health Partners, we, 24 hospitals, we were going to have a focused conversation among our infection control practitioners, part of our network. We like to share best practices internally, and we asked Gina Puglisi for advice about national speakers, and that led to today's presentation. The meeting was expanded simultaneously. Those of you who were at the HEN meeting yesterday knew that we were working with Premier to have a regional meeting in the Cincinnati market. So we combined the two. So that's kind of the origins of today. So we're very thankful for Premier for all their support. And I'd like to thank Jeff Vauder for organizing this and Chantel Hinton for doing all the hard work in coordinating this. And on my team, Mary Gillen, who is in the audience, did yeoman's work organizing the meeting. And then back at my office, Karen Baird and Connie Hillman really helped us. So I just want to thank those. And I want to thank all of you for joining us. I'm going to now turn this over to Gina Puglisi, who is the Vice President of Safety at Premier. And many of you know her through her Safety Share newsletter. Gina is a national spokesperson on patient safety herself. And whenever I pick up the Wall Street Journal on an article about safety, there's a quote from Gina in it. And she's also part of the SCIP improvement, the SCIP project at CMS and the NQF Hospital Acquired Infection Group. And she also is the first one to promote me to an executive level position.
Thanks, Steve. Well, again, welcome on behalf of Premier. We are absolutely delighted. And in addition to the partnership folks and the Catholic Health Partner folks, we opened this up to anybody that wanted to come because we think this is a really important topic. And we're absolutely thrilled to have CDC here and Gloria Morrell to join us and share with us the NHSN ins and outs that we're going to be hearing about. This presentation today is going to be audio recorded, and it's going to be available starting Monday on our website. If you go to premierinc.com/safety and then click on the NHSN button, you'll go right to the page where it's located, and there'll be the audio files, and there'll be all the slides that you have in your packet, but the answers will be there too. So, but they're not there today. And you have on your tables, not enough for every single person, we had a wonderful, overwhelming response to this, are the audience response little things, so you'll have to share them. You'll be chatting amongst yourself anyway, deciding what the answers are and whether something's hospital acquired or not. So grab one of those audience responses, and Gloria will tell you how that's going to work. So I'm absolutely delighted and honored to introduce our speaker today, Gloria Morrell. And she is a nurse consultant in the surveillance branch in the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She got her BSN at the University of Florida and her master's at Brenau in Gainesville, Georgia. She has a very rich experience, a clinical experience in critical care, addictive disease, education. She was also a nurse practitioner in the public health system. And long history in infection prevention as well, focusing primarily on high-risk populations, including the ICU nursery, the hem-onc, and the transplant units. So she comes with a very, very rich history and lots of clinical experience in infection prevention. So we are delighted to have her today, and so please join me in welcoming Gloria Morrell.
Well, thank you, Gina. And can everybody hear me? Okay, this may be the most beautiful place I've ever spoken at. What do you think? This is great. Thank you for having it here. I took the walking tour last night. It's pretty wonderful. So anyway, I was talking to a friend last night about what I was doing, and she says, well, what are you going to talk about? And I said, surgical site infections and urinary tract infections. She goes, oh. I said, really? I think they're going to be interested in this. She goes, okay. So I hope you are interested. And then halfway through or toward the end, we're going to have these interactive case studies, and that's what those little voting devices are. Now, I took them from CDC, and there were 100, and hopefully there will be 100 when we get back because we're on a budget. And so it's not really a great souvenir for you either because it won't do anything without this little thing here. So, but what you'll do is generally there will be only 4 responses, and you'll go 1, 2, 3, 4 if you click it, and you just point at me and click it, and it'll vote. And then we can see how well you do, and then we'll discuss what the real answer is. Hopefully, we'll be all on the same page. Okay, so our objectives for today are really, I want you to know the resources for SSI surveillance. I want to review the requirements for reporting to CMS, because isn't that the big deal right now? And I want us to kind of identify the protocol, key terms, make sure you're up to date on all the little nuances, review our definitions, apply the definitions using our interactive case studies. So just a reminder, we have 5 modules in the patient safety component, and this morning I'm going to be talking about the procedure-associated module, that is SSI. It's the infection risk relates back to the surgical procedure. And these are the forms that you'll be using when you complete and input information into the database. And these are the parts of the patient safety manual. And I know some people are new to NHSN. They just started with CMS reporting. And I think sometimes people don't even realize that in addition to the website where you enter your information and your infections, all and your denominators, there is a help website, and these are the things I'm referring to, and the links are below. So there's a whole gigantic website for you all to use, rich with all kinds of information. It's all there if you can find it. And at that note, I want to let you know we actually have had a usability expert help us, and we're updating our database also to make it more user-friendly. So here are the chapters that will be very helpful to you as you complete your SSI information. And, you know, sometimes things get very complicated. You might have to look up something. And I did want to point out the tables of instructions, chapter 14. Sometimes people don't even realize that that particular chapter is there. And it goes line by line, giving you information on how to complete every field on the form. So just know that's there for you. But of course, we are there, the infection preventionists that manage the help desk, the online help desk, so you can always email us. But I want to let you know there's a lot of resources that sometimes we don't think about. Our monthly reporting plan is very important. It is really the roadmap to your data. And only data included in your plan will be used for aggregate data or will be used and sent to CMS. When you put your plan in, it drives the business rules that run the application. So if you forget to put something in your plan, like you're following pneumonias in ICU, then when you go to put a pneumonia in as an event, it won't allow you to. So always go back to your plan and make sure it's up to date. And even if, although now with most of us using CMS or participating in CMS, we actually have to report 12 months a year. If by chance you're not reporting and participating in CMS, you have to put in a plan every month, but you do not have to actually follow protocols every month for NHSN. And we also want you to use active surveillance measures because that's where we get the really rich data, right? We want you, of course, we're going to be following colons and hysterectomies if we're participating in a CMS IPPS reporting. But if you have some extra time left over and you want to identify what is a high risk, high volume procedure for your facility, that may be something you want to track. You are the expert, and you're the one that's going to make that decision. So you determine which surgeries you want to monitor, and these are the ways you can find out information. And again, I always tell IPs, you are really the expert of your facility. Once you get comfortable, and you know, we always have to be nosing around, don't we? We have to. Our noses are in every part of the facility, but that's how we find out how to obtain data. So we want you to review the charts, find out ways that you can get information that will get the information you need to do your SSI reporting, and use any kind of diagnostic testing available to you. Sometimes it may be paper level. Sometimes you're lucky enough to have it electronically. And remember, let's not forget, post-discharge surveillance. This is a very important piece of SSI surveillance because many times the patient does not develop the SSI while they're still an inpatient. Isn't that correct? So we ask you again, as the leader of your facility, to identify a way to set up a post-discharge surveillance system. That can be in a big hospital. You send something out in the medical staff mail out, but do teach the physicians and office staff the criteria, because we want to make sure that they understand how to count an SSI or at least call you about something related to a surveillance definition. And this is another way to get people on board with you, because once they start using the surveillance definition, they actually may learn that you have a different way of reporting. So it is important to follow up using post-discharge surveillance. I want to let you know we're working on a tool that will be out later this year to help you, and then you can tweak that tool to meet the needs of your facility. So criteria must be met, and with SSI, you can meet those criteria when the patient is already discharged. Okay, and here's the very important slide. It shows the CMS reporting, current and proposed, and you can see our SSI colon and abdominal hysterectomies began in January 2012. Okay, and colon and hysterectomy procedures will be included in your monthly plan, and when you report accurately, those data will be downloaded to CMS at the appropriate time. And it's really 4.5 months after the last date of your reporting. It sounds very complicated, but the first deadline is coming up August 15th, and that we will be downloading the first quarter of January, February, March data for your SSI reporting. Now, we want you to report your surgical site infections and include all the procedures that were performed every month in your facility. If you're lucky enough, and we hope you are, to not have an SSI, we actually want you to also show that, and there's a way now that we're going to be showing that. Here's an example of our monthly plan. Here's an example of the operative procedures, and this also is in Chapter 9, the SSI chapter. And I was joking last night with some of the IPs because, you know, the SSI chapter is rich with information, and you might think you've read it all. But then if you have a new issue, if you go back and read it, something will pop up that you didn't remember. It's amazing. So here's the list of colon and abdominal surgeries. You can see the top part is the ICD-9 codes, and here these are CPT codes. So we have done a crosswalk for colon and hysterectomies with ICD-9 codes and CPT codes, and there they are, the CPT codes. But I just want to remind you that we've added the CPT codes as we move towards outpatient ambulatory surgery centers because they use CPT codes. But for most of us in inpatient settings, we should be using ICD-9 codes. And remember, we had a little issue with hysterectomy reporting detail. It's amazing when you start doing something nationwide, you find out where there are little bugs in the system. And what the medical coders and we found out is that people all over the country were coding hysterectomies differently. So our guidance now speaks about which structures and how they are detached, the surgical technique or an approach, not the locations where the structures were removed determines the ICD-9 code. So this is our latest guidance. Don't panic. You don't have to know all of this. We have it all updated in our protocol, and we also have guidance documents explaining this and the rationale. And we've also, the medical coders nationally have sent this information to their coders as well. If you have no SSIs to report, we want you to click, and again, this information will be available to you on incomplete information, missing procedure-associated events, and then you will click that you had no CBGDs, no coronary artery bypass grafts for that month. You had no C-section infections. You have had no AAA abdominal aneurysm repair, and you had no, or you did have an ovary surgery that did have an SSI. So we want not only, so basically you're telling us we had zero infections for that month. That gives us proof that you completed everything as you were supposed to. And here are the two forms. Again, we have forms available that you can print off if you need to go physically to find information and then go back and input your information. We have both the SSI form and the denominator for procedure form. But as we go forward today, let's talk about our operative procedure. This is the definition for an NHSN operative procedure, and right now we're talking all of our operative procedures have to have primary skin to skin closure. Okay? We also need to tell you that the inpatient, we need to all be on the same page. What is an inpatient? In NHSN, an inpatient is a patient whose date of admission to the facility and date of discharge are different days, while our outpatient is a patient whose date of admission to the healthcare facility and discharge are the same day. In operating room, we want you to count procedures and infections that are performed in operating rooms meeting criteria for an operating room as defined by the Facilities Guideline Institute, or as some of us remember, the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, criteria for an operating room. For example, has certain air control, temperature settings, humidity, etc. So you can have surgeries performed in these areas, but we want to make sure that if you are counting surgeries that are performed in your interventional radiology room, that that room is set up like an operating room. Otherwise, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with surgeries that are done with a different baseline. Maybe there'll be a higher risk of infection if you don't have the surgeries are being done in an area not set up like an OR. So we don't want those data in our database. And here we go back to that ever-important procedure code here. And what we want to show you, too, is the top few four number section there are the ICD-9 codes. You can see our abdominal hysterectomy. We want you to report all of the ICD-9 codes above that line. If your facility only does four of them and not five, then only count four of them. But what we don't want you to do is say, well, we're only going to count one kind of abdominal hysterectomy. No, if you've agreed to follow hysterectomy as a procedure, if your facility performs those surgeries, then those surgeries will be reported in NHSN as a hysterectomy. Okay? And so here's an example of amputation. If you're following limb amputation, then you have, if your facility is performing surgeries with those ICD-9 codes, then we want you to report them. You can't say, well, I think I'm only going to report the 8491. You can't do that. We want you to follow the whole group. And usually it's not as big a problem, but with colon surgeries, there's a lot of procedures. And I was not that familiar with ICD-9 codes, but this is where we infection preventionists kind of get to know people all over the facility. This is where you get to know your medical coders and get to borrow their little book or buy one for yourself, because you do need to kind of get familiar with the ICD-9 codes when you're doing NHSN SSI surveillance. Now, it's very important to complete your denominator form correctly. And remember, in infection control, we always know we've got infections over the population or the whatever at risk. With our denominator data, it's called the denominator for procedure form, we're completing all of the surgeries that are potentially at risk to get an infection. And then, of course, we're going to follow the cases that become infected. But if we're not careful and we don't pay attention to this, what if we only report 4 out of 5 of our, are careful about identifying 4 out of 5 of our surgical cases performed in a month, and we get 2 infections? Do you think our infection rate's going to be higher? So it's very important for you to pay attention to your denominator data. Make sure you're collecting your data correctly and attributing and counting all the surgeries that are done. Your procedure form, we will basically, in this case, the facility indicated that they were monitoring total hip procedures, K-PROs, in January. 43 K-PROs were done that month, and you will import or enter the 43 K-PRO denominator for procedure records. And, of course, it's a lot easier if you have electronically a way to import these data. Here are some of the information, you know, the basic denominator information is required. Just a point of interest, if you see a star in front of the field, that means that's a required field. So if it does not have a star, you may or may not want to use this information for your facility, but you do not have to use it for importing into NHSN. And as of this year, we're not requiring you to put in the information whether a non-autologous transplant was performed, because when we looked at the data, that was not significant. So we don't want to waste your time, believe it or not. We're trying to keep the work down a little bit. And here's our procedure code information. Your procedure code and the date of procedure must be included. And basically, in this case, it's a AAA procedure code, and we have that in our chapter. Plus, once you're putting the event in electronically, it'll have a drop-down box. You do not have to include the ICD-9 code. That is optional. And remember, some of our operative procedures have more than one incision, and an excellent example is a coronary artery bypass graft, both, meaning there's a chest incision and there's a donor site incision. And in that case, we'll have 2 different incisions. Another example is fusion, where there is both an anterior and a posterior approach. So for these procedures, you will only complete 1 denominator for procedure form. And we'll go into some of those details. Here are some of the procedure details that are required, and I'm going to go over that for you. We ask, is this an outpatient, yes or no? It's a little confusing because most of us are reporting inpatients. So if you say outpatient, no, that means you're reporting inpatients. Okay? And duration. Record the hours and the minutes between skin incision and skin closure. Do not report the anesthesia time. Additional rules, and we do have rules, don't we? But they're all in Chapter 9 for you, and you don't have to memorize them. If more than one NHSN operative procedure is done through the same incision during the same trip to the OR, you will create a separate denominator for procedure form for each procedure done through the same incision, and use the total time for the duration. And here our example is, patient had a coronary artery bypass graft with a donor leg incision and a mitral valve replacement, which is a cardiac surgery. Time from first incision to closure was 5 hours. The denominator for procedure record is completed for the CBGB and another for the card, and both indicate 5 hours and 0 minutes on the record. Another rule is that if a patient goes to the OR more than one time in 24 hours and another procedure is performed through the same incision, then you only report the 1 incision combining and adding the additional duration. So here's our example. The patient had colon surgery performed on Tuesday morning with a duration of 3 hours and 10 minutes, and on Tuesday evening, he was returned to the OR where the colo incision was opened to repair a leaking anastomosis. The duration of the second procedure was 1 hour and 10 minutes. Report only colo with a combined duration of 4 hours and 20 minutes. And all of these rules I'm going over are actually affectionately located on page 912 and 913 of the SSI chapter. They're all there for you to use. When you get used to applying them for the specific surgeries performed in your facility, I think you'll be more comfortable with that. But if you add a new procedure or something happens, that's when you're definitely going to have to go in there and look things up. For example, for bilateral procedures, you're going to complete two separate denominator for procedure records, and you would show them the hours and minutes for each knee, for example. But if you don't have that information, if it's not documented in the operating room report carefully, then you take the total time for both incisions and split it in half. Okay? And basically here we've got wound class, clean, clean contaminated, contaminated and dirty. And remember that wound class is an assessment of the likelihood and degree of contamination of a surgical wound at the time of the operation itself. The surgical team are the people that usually assign wound class. And if something goes wrong during the surgery and we have some sort of contamination occurs, they have the right to drop the wound class down to a dirtier class. Historically, we all know that we've always been involved in helping teach this to the surgical team, and this is even no more important now. It's even more important as we report using CMS. But in reality, they are the ones that are really responsible for that, but certainly you should be involved in helping teaching them the correct way to do this. NHSN did not write wound classification schema. The American College of Surgeons did. Our criteria for wound class is in key terms chapter, and it's at the very end, wound classification, and describes each wound class and how to assign the risk. Also, general anesthesia. We've got a definition for that. And basically, we're saying that this is a general administration of drugs or gases that enter the general circulation and affect the central nervous system to render the patient pain-free and anesthetic unconscious. So that's our definition for general anesthesia. Yes. You would say yes if it was general anesthesia. ASA code is another coding convention that was defined by the American Society of Anesthesiologists, and they're really assessing the patient's preoperative physical condition. So a patient with an ASA class of 1 means they're very healthy, and ASA class of 4 means they have a lot of comorbidities, and thus it could be this surgery has a higher risk for infection. And emergency is required. Select yes if the operative procedure is non-elective and unscheduled. And what we mean by that, let's keep remembering what this application is doing. We are really looking for risk of infection, right? So emergency means we didn't have enough time to treat the patient, to decolonize the patient, or assess the patient thoroughly because it was an emergency. And by not being able to do that, we think that this surgery may be higher risk for infection. Okay? Same thing with trauma. If this operation was done because of blunt or penetrating injury, say yes. Okay? Endoscope. Endoscope is required if the entire procedure was performed using a laparoscopic or robotic assist. We get a lot of questions about this because we have a lot of cases that the incision is extended for hand assist, or a gel port is placed where the glove goes in. Whenever those cases occur, we consider that going back to a traditional open incision, so you would put laparoscope no. Okay, so anytime we extend that incision, it is going to take the surgical procedure and disallow it from being laparoscopic. Okay? And you can always ask us questions using the NHSN mailbox. That's what we ITs are there for, to help you with these questions. And it's amazing sometimes all the different iterations of patient presentation that we come across. It's just amazing. So that's what we're here for, to help you. Remember, too, if one or more of the endoscopic robotic incisions become infected, report only one SSI. So if you have five trocar sites, you know, even if two or three become infected, there's still one infection. But if one is a superficial infection and another trocar site shows deep incisional, then report your most complex SSI, which in this case would be deep. And we have surgeon code. This is an optional field, but if you have to track your surgeons in your facility, very helpful. Also, if you have teams of surgeons that work on a particular surgical type, then you can create your own group code to assign for that surgical team. And implant, that's one of our other very complicated and interesting fields to discuss. And basically, it is a non-human derived object, material, or tissue placed in a patient, and I'm showing you what we've taken out during an operative procedure. This operative object is considered an implant until it's manipulated. So if somebody puts in a breast implant and then they expand it with saline, then once that has been done, even if it's in the doctor's office, you will no longer count that as an implant because it's been manipulated, nor will you follow that surgery out for a year because of the manipulation. Okay? Non-absorbable sutures are excluded because you may not be able to identify the material that are used, so we don't want you to worry about that. So in summary, it's very important for us to complete our denominator for procedure records. We went over all the different fields that you need and use all of our guides to help you complete the procedure. And remember, we have mapping. We have actually have a big spreadsheet that has all the ICD-9 codes and what they correlate with an NHSN, whether it's an operative procedure, a non-operative procedure. OTH means it's an other procedure, but it's not followed in NHSN aggregate data that's published. So all of this is available for you on the NHSN website under Resources Library. We have a lot of new interactive training courses as well, and we're going to have a training course in October, and that will be web streamed. So even though we'll have space for 300 people, it'll be live web streamed, and everybody can listen in. So if that's going to be a change in the future. We do have other changes for you, and I think a lot of them you're going to be very happy with. I'm not going to go into gory detail, but basically we've taken the data for the last couple years and combined them, and since there's so much more reporting of SSI, it's changed the order of our operative procedure categories. So we'll be publishing a new operative procedure category selection list in 2013, okay, with using the newest data available. And we'll go over that later. Also, we're discussing it's very controversial about patients coming into the hospital obviously infected, which we know at that time generally you would assign a wound class of 3 or 4. But because of public reporting, there's a lot of questions related to that, and some of the state laws and mandates don't talk about, they make facilities count all of their SSIs. We're looking at discussing the issues of infections present at time of surgery and whether there's an SSI that would be reportable. And the same thing, you'll be very happy. We're going to have a very simple interpretation of implant, and you're going to just be so excited. So just wanted to let you know, okay, there's good things coming. And so here we're getting into the meat and potatoes of what we IPs have always loved to do, is to find infections, right? But we can do that now because we know we've got a very good way of counting all our procedures as well. So this is the picture worth 1,000 words as far as I'm concerned. It shows how NHSN has defined the three types of surgical site infections. Superficial includes the skin and subcutaneous tissue. Deep incisional is found in the deep soft tissue, which includes the fascia and muscle and organ space. includes the organ space. The infection is deep into the organ space. So when you get confused and maybe you don't want to look at any more writing, keep this picture and go, oh yeah, and read your op report, and it helps guide you. Okay, so our superficial SSI, these have not changed in many years from those of us that have been using NHS for a long time. The infection occurs within 30 days, with or without an implant, only 30 days after surgery, okay? And has to involves only the skin and subcutaneous tissues and includes purulent drainage. It can include organisms obtained from an aseptically obtained culture. It also can include a situation where patient has pain or tenderness and other signs and symptoms of infection, and the incision is deliberately opened by the surgeon, and is culture positive or not cultured. So if the surgeon opens and you get a negative culture, you can't meet criterion 3C, but you can meet some of the other criteria. And sometimes people are misinformed. They think if they can't meet at least three or a couple of these, then they can't count the infection as SSI superficial, but you can. All you have to do is meet one of them. And of course, you have the diagnosis of superficial incision by the surgeon or attending physician. And here we've got examples, again, with superficial incisional SSI. We have a incisional primary infection. That means the infection is from the major incision, coming from the major primary incision, or we can have superficial incisional secondary. And all of this shows up when you put the information in the application. It'll just flow, and it'll click and ask you whether this is a SIP or a cyst. A cyst is superficial SSI that is from the leg, for example. So it's from the secondary incision, not the primary incision. Yes. Okay, that's a good question. The question from the floor is that what if you have multiple infections from your laparoscopic procedure? Okay, you have three of the five trocar sites infected. Then that would be one. That's your primary incision. In other words, laparoscopic, all of those trocars are really equivalent to your primary incision. Okay. And I don't know of any there are no secondaries for laparoscopic. Good question. So you have several trocar sites, that would be your primary. That would be superficial incisional primary. And here's our example. Patient delivers a baby by C-section on August 23rd, and on the first postpartum visit to her surgeon, excuse me, on September 20th, she notes purulent drainage in the superficial incisional. Incision. Does Gretchen have a surgical site infection? Yes. Is it superficial SSI? Yes. Is it a SIP or a SIP? It's a SIP. It's superficial incisional primary because she had only one incision, didn't she? It was her C-section incision. So it would be her infection is superficial, incisional to the primary site. Okay, here's another example. Patient underwent a coronary artery bypass graft, CBGB, in which the surgeon obtained a donor vessel from a site in Robert's left leg. 5 days post-op, the patient has fever, edema, and the surgeon opens the superficial incision, drains the pus, and irrigates the wound. Does Robert have a superficial incisional SSI? Yes. Is it a cyst or a SIP? Is it superficial incisional secondary or superficial incisional primary? It's a cyst. Superficial incisional secondary. Very good. So that's how you're going to do that. And this also, this separation also occurs with deep incisional. You can have deep incisional primary infections and deep incisional secondary. And when you go to enter the infection, you'll have that choice in the drop-down box. So let's look at the difference in our deep incisional SSI criterion. Okay, the infection can occur within 30 days after the operative procedure if no implant is left in place. If there is an implant identified, you will follow this surgery for one year. And if the infection appears to be related to the surgical procedure. And in this case, we drop down, the infection involves the fascia and muscle layers of the incision. And we need one of the four. In this case, the purulent drainage comes from the deep incision, but not from the organ space. And, or a deep incision spontaneously dehisses. So in this case, we're starting to see dehiscence. Or is deliberately opened by the surgeon, and is culture positive or not cultured. A negative finding, you cannot use this criteria. Okay? And in this case, for B, you have this information that you have to follow about the culturing, but you also have to have a symptom. One symptom. Fever, localized pain, or tenderness. And this is where it's very important, even after all these years of DNIP and teaching this all the time and helping answering emails, I still keep my criteria with me, because each case that you give us, they can be very complicated, and you have to ferret out, oh, yes, that's right, it is deep, but did the doctor do this? So you really do need to have these criteria out for you to use. And C, we have an abscess in this case because we've got this deeper infection or other evidence infections involving the deep incision found by direct exam, during reoperation, or by histopathologic or radiographic or radiologic findings. So they did some sort of tissue workup, or they did an MRI or a CAT scan and identify an abscess. So that's how you would meet C. And D, for all three are the same. The diagnosis of deep incisional SSI was obtained from the surgeon or the attending physician. Okay? And again, as I mentioned, you have the stratification for deep incisional primary and deep incisional secondary infections, just as you do for superficial. And it makes more sense when you go put the event in. Now, here's our organ space. This is what, you know, kind of the big daddy of all the SSIs, because it's usually a very complex and deep infection, and maybe it's more of a major infection than some of the other ones. And this infection occurs within 30 days after the operative procedure, if no implant is in place, and you can follow for up to a year if an implant is in place at the time of surgery, and the infection appears to be part of the operative procedure. And the infection involves any part of the body, but not the skin, fascia, or muscle layers now. We're deep, deep into the organ space, okay? And we'll look at these criteria once we identify that this particular infection is in the organ space. We're going to meet one of these four criteria. Purulent drainage. At this point, we need to have a drain, don't we? When we've got the organ space, we're going to have a drain in place. Placed through a stab wound into the organ space. So if you have drainage there, that would count. Or it has to be purulent, and organisms isolated from an aseptically culture of fluid or tissue in the organ space. C, an abscess. Again, we may see abscesses in this area of the body, or other evidence of infection involving the organ space that is found on direct exam, during reoperation, by histopathologic or radiographic exam, okay? Or D, the diagnosis of organ space SSI by a surgeon or attending physician. So we meet this, right? We meet one of these. And when we meet one of these, then we move on to a second piece, because organ space SSI has another part of the definition you have to meet in order to count the infection as organ space in NHSN. And I'm opening up my copy. With organ space SSI, we obviously have identified an organ space infection. NHSN has listed all of the organ space that you could have an infection in our Chapter 9. Specific sites of infection must be used to differentiate organ space SSI and these criteria must be met. So sometimes people think, well, the doctor told me that this patient had cardiac surgery and has endocarditis, and the patient's cardiac surgery does meet the SSI criteria for organ space, so I'm just going to count it. But in reality, you're supposed to do another step. You're supposed to go to Chapter 17 of the manual. That is our healthcare-associated infection definitions chapter. And you go to the definition for endocarditis, and you have to meet the definition for endocarditis. When you meet both of those definitions, the organ space SSI definition, the endocarditis definition, then you report the infection in NHSM. What happens if you meet the criteria for organ space SSI, but when you go to endocarditis, you cannot meet the criteria? That infection will not be reportable as organ space infection within NHSM. So just a little point of information. Sometimes people don't always know this. The other good thing to know is that we are reorganizing Chapter 17 because it has been, since it was published in 2008, how many of us, how much have we been changing, right? Things have been changing at such a rapid rate, and we have all of these additions in the front of the chapter, very difficult to read, so we're working right now on reorganizing that, and also we're working on updating the definitions because some of the definitions are quite out of date. So we are working very hard on that, but unfortunately, because a lot of our information has to be sent to the vendors for the applications to be changed, things go very slowly. It's not like we're really working slowly, but there's so many checks and balances to get it put into the application itself that there's a lag time. Okay, so when a patient with an SSI has more than one operation prior to an SSI, then you'll report the operation that was performed most closely in time to the infection date. Okay, because sometimes our patients are very complex. For example, a patient underwent a colo on 2/12/2010. 3 days later, he went back to surgery to repair a leaking anastomosis, which is defined by NHSN as an OTH or an other procedure. That means that this particular surgical procedure meets the NHSN definition for a surgical procedure, but this particular procedure, the repair of the leaking anastomosis, is not included in NHSN aggregate data. And unless your facility is following OTH procedures for this type of surgery, then you generally would not attribute the SSI to the first surgery. So in this case, after the OTH surgery, the patient developed an intra-abdominal abscess on 3/18. The SSI attributed to the second procedure, the OTH, not the original colo. So we want to remind you that when we're talking about surgical site infections, we're trying to capture the risk occurring at the time of the surgery itself. So if another surgical team went in the middle of the night and fixed this leaking anastomosis, do you think any infection occurring really has everything to do with the first surgery and not the second? No. The second surgery has gone into that operative field and happened, and it changes the fact that we won't be looking at the activities or the risk from that first surgery. It makes sense, but sometimes people are focusing so much on the surgeries that they have decided to follow that they want to go back to that original surgery. There's a question, yes. If you have a second procedure as a colon procedure, then you would report that as a colon and complete a denominator for denominator form. That's a little bit of a confusing caveat, but if you're going through the same incision, I think what you would do is we allow you to count. Use whichever procedure that you think the infection came from. But generally, many times, these second procedures are not really another NHSM procedure that you're following. So this first example would probably be the best. And if more than one operation is performed through a single incision, determine the procedure that is thought to be associated with the infection. So if the patient had CBGB and a card done at the same time and developed an infected valve, then the SSI is linked to the cardiac surgery. If it is not clear when you have two surgeries being done, and use the NHSN principal operative procedure selection list. And that's that list that I showed you earlier that's going to be updated. But this is the current list. And you can see here that because we're not sure which surgical procedure was responsible for the infection, if you look at risk for infection, the CBGB, the coronary artery bypass graft chest incision only, is the surgery that you would attribute the SSI to, because the cardiac surgery is considered a little bit lower risk. Okay? Completing the SSI event form. Here is the SSI event form that we will so diligently do our surveillance to find out to complete all of the required fields. And we will complete an SSI event form for each patient with an SSI meeting any of the three sets of criteria. And again, we've got our basic information that are required. And again, when you see that asterisk, those are required fields. The date of procedure is the date the operation was performed. The procedure code, you would enter the NHSN operative procedure code for that procedure. And again, you do not have to include your ICD-9 code if you don't want to. And other information is, again, that optional ICD-9 code and whether the surgery is in or outpatient. And some procedures are only allowed in the application for inpatients, for example, solid organ transplants and open heart surgery. I don't think they have gotten to that yet, that we're doing open heart surgery on an outpatient basis. So here too, if you're following MDRO, multi-drug resistant organism protocol in NHSN, if you are following MDRO infection surveillance, you would choose yes, this event, pathogen, and location are in plan for the MDRO module. If you are not, and many of us are not, you would say no. Okay, so this is the connection between MDRO and each of the protocols. It can connect if you're following infection surveillance. So you would have an infection, for example, with MRSA, and you're also following the infection surveillance protocol of MDRO, and then this yes will connect those two events together. Okay, and your SSI form, your basic SSI infection is to enter the date the patient was admitted to the hospital, when the operation was performed, and the location where the patient was housed after leaving the OR. Now, we get a lot of questions about this, but this is never a location or admission associated with readmission or where the patient was when we identified the SSI. And this location is an optional field in SSI. So this location is only used if you, as your facility, want to fill it out. So don't lose a lot of sleep identifying necessarily where the patient was when they were readmitted. That is not how we attribute risk to SSI. How do we attribute risk? Back to the surgical procedure itself, okay? So location is an optional field, and we get a lot of questions sometimes with people really concerned about answering this correctly. Remember, there's no asterisk in front of it. This is purely for your use for your facility, okay? And another event form here is we're going to show the specific SSI event. In this case, we've checked off deep incisional primary infection, okay? Here, we've identified that we have an organ space infection, and remember that specific site I told you? In this case, we have an organ space, and we also have a specific site of mediastinitis. And these will show up in the drop-down box. When you check organ space, then the specific site will show up, and you can check that off. Okay, now remember, the application of the business rule is depending on how what you have in your plan and whether you've checked this is a deep incisional SSI versus a superficial. What will happen is these different elements will either become available for you to check or they'll be grayed out. That's all dependent on whether you have what you've chosen, what kind of SSI you've got. So if you choose correctly, you've got a deep incisional, then the infection events, the elements that are used to meet your criteria will be enervated so that you can check the right box. So if you see a grayed out box and you're not able to check correctly, then go back, check your plan, and check what you chose for your type of surgical procedure. And another piece of information we are interested in is event details. And this really is, how did we identify this surgical site infection? This is new this year, and A means the SSI was identified before the patient left your facility from the original surgical procedure. That would be A. P is the SSI is identified during post-discharge surveillance, including ED visits to your facility, but no readmission. RF means the SSI was identified, your procedure, your facility performed the surgery, and the patient was readmitted to your facility. That's RF. And RO is the SSI was identified during the patient admission to a facility other than yours, or other than the facility where an operation was performed. So RO. So this is just ways that we're trying to identify how we did define this information, and it is a required field. Check the box to indicate when or how the SSI was identified. Okay? And another important thing, especially now with all of us reporting our CLABSI data, many of us are reporting also to CMS, we're very interested in making sure we can identify bloodstream infections that are secondary to an HAI infection at another site, right? So here is how you would see secondary bloodstream infection acquired. If the patient had a culture-confirmed bloodstream infection with a documented SSI, you can say that yes or no, that there was a secondary bloodstream infection. Okay? So if the criterion met for the primary infection site requires a culture, then you must have a matching organism in your bloodstream results, okay? Positive bloodstream results. If the SSI or any other NHSN HAI criteria just tells you to meet some sort of criteria that does not require a culture, then you can still choose the count the bloodstream infection as secondary if the organism is makes sense to be from that particular body site. For example, a patient grows E. coli in her deep incision and in her blood. The SSI is primary and the bloodstream infection is secondary. If the patient has a central line in place, then that bloodstream infection is not considered CLABSI. Okay, so if criterion met for a primary infection site does not require a culture and the blood isolate is a logical pathogen for the site, you can also report as secondary. And here's our example. 6 days post-op, the patient had a colonic abscess confirmed by CT scan. On the same day, his blood was drawn and induced Bacteroides fragilis. The infection was reported as SSI-GIT organ space with a secondary bloodstream infection, and that organism is defrag, and that is really a logical organism for that part of the body. And we have guidance here to help you. This is all in the back of the CLABSI chapter, chapter 4. It explains carefully for you how to go ahead and attribute secondary bloodstream infection. Very helpful, especially many of us are really looking closely at this to help us. We have other event details. It is required whether the patient died or not. And sometimes when we're reporting, we don't have that information, do we? But remember, if you do not fill this out, die. If you don't complete that, you could save your record, but you cannot, but the record is considered incomplete. So do take the time to go back and find out when the patient's discharged that they didn't die, or if you, whatever system you want. But remember, it is very important that you do finally complete that field, okay? Contributed to death, that's whether the SSI directly contributed to death. That is an optional field, okay? But it's very important for you to make sure you complete that, whether the patient died or not. Yes? Okay, the question is, what if the patient died on a subsequent visit, but it is related directly to the surgical site procedure? Then that would be yes. Okay, there's no time frame, but, and you might want at that point to also state SSI contributed to death, yes. Okay. And also, event details, your discharge date from the facility is optional. And your pathogen, if you do have pathogens, it is required, and you will complete your pathogen list. And this, at first, was very confusing for many of us. I want to let you know that we are reconfiguring this to make it more user-friendly. But what we have here for each antimicrobial agent identified, you're going to circle the pathogen's susceptibility results. And so, if you're from a very small facility and you don't do a lot of this testing, you can choose N, not tested, all along the whole form if you have to. So we have susceptible, intermediate, resistant. NS is non-susceptible. SDD is susceptible but dose-dependent. And N is not tested. So you can actually complete an organism form and not even have the pathogen susceptibility results, because not all hospitals have the same level of testing capabilities. Okay? So now we're getting into the fun part. Find your clickers, okay? And you can actually talk among yourselves, and because this later will be used by or reviewed by other people, I'm going to go over verbally what we've identified. So this is the fun part. Okay, yes. Can we save it till the end? Let's save it to the end. Okay, we're going to save any questions to the end if we have time. All right? Okay, case one. And what we're going to do here is if there's four answers, you'll go across. There's three, and then the fourth one is down on the second line. Okay? Patient had bilateral knee prostheses, KPRO, implanted during a single trip to the OR. The left KPRO incision was begun at 8:23 a.m. and closed at 9:50. The right KPRO incision at 10:03 and closed at 11:33. Which statement is true? One KPRO procedure should be ported with a combined duration of 2 hours and 57 minutes. Two separate KPRO procedures should be reported, each with a duration of 2 hours and 57 minutes. Three, two separate KPRO procedures should be reported, left KPRO with a duration of 1 hour and 27 minutes, and right KPRO with a duration of 1 hour and 30 minutes. Okay, now you can start responding, and know that there is not a real test. I won't come after the people that don't have the answer right. Plus, we don't really have our protocols in front of you, so it's a little bit of a trick here. Okay? here our voting shows that 75% of us said that answer three is correct. Two separate KPRO procedures should be reported, left KPRO with a duration of 1 hour and 27 minutes, and right KPRO with a duration of 1 hour 30 minutes. And 13% of us said that one KPRO procedure should be reported with a combined duration. 11% said two separate procedures should be reported, each with a duration of 2 hours and 57 minutes. So let's see. The answer is 3, so we're doing well here, even with your having to, you know, go back and use your memory instead of the protocol. Very good. Okay. Case one rationale. For bilateral operative procedures, for example, KPRO, two separate denominator for procedure records are completed. To document the duration of procedure, indicate the incision time to closure time for each procedure separately, or alternatively, take the total time for both procedures and split it evenly between the two. And here again is that fateful SSI chapter, denominator data notes number 4. Okay? Case 2. Not all of our cases are going to be voting cases, but I'll tell you when they are. On 6/18, a 45-year-old man had a colon resection. And on 6/22, his abdominal incision has purulent drainage from subcutaneous tissue and slight erythema and induration. Incision is intact. Wound drainage specimen was sent to the lab for culture, and on 6/24, the result is Enterobacter species and E. coli. The patient was then started on antibiotics. What should be reported to NHSN? This is a voting question. Number 1 is nothing. The surgeon did not open the wound, so criteria are not met. 2, nothing. It is an SSI, but not an HAI. 3, this is an SSI, superficial incisional primary. 4, this is an SSI, deep incisional primary. You can start voting. I can see some of you are doing really well here. Give you a little bit more time. Okay, I'm going to close the voting. And let's see. 86% of us said this is a superficial incisional infection primary site. And you are correct. So 86% of you answered correctly. 10% of you said this is a deep incisional primary, not superficial. So we need to go back and look at what was defined by the findings, and then look at that schematic of the wound classification system. And there were a few with the 1 and 2. And the rationale is this infection occurred within 30 days after the operative procedure, so it's superficial, incisional. It involved only the skin and subcutaneous tissue. That's the key here. And the patient was identified as having purulent drainage from the superficial incision. And additionally, organisms were isolated from an aseptically obtained culture of the fluid from the superficial incision. So this particular SSI actually met 2 criteria. Okay? Case 3. Patient is admitted to the hospital on 4/12 for elective surgery, and active MRSA screening test is positive. On the same day, patient undergoes total abdominal hysterectomy, a HIST. Operative course is unremarkable. Patient is discharged on 4/16. On 4/29, the patient is readmitted with a red angry wound that is opened to the fascial layer or level by the surgeon and is cultured. On 5/1, the culture results are positive for MRSA. This is a voting question. Is this a healthcare-associated infection? Okay. Okay, I'll go ahead and close the voting. Okay, 66% of us said it is a healthcare-associated infection, and 34% of us said no, this is not a healthcare-associated infection. And the answer is yes, this is a healthcare-associated infection. And the reason is, a patient colonized with an organism is not a reason for us not to count the infection as a healthcare-associated infection. For example, if we identify, and that's why we do surveillance screening, right, to check for MRSA, especially after or before very important surgeries like joint surgeries, the surgeons may screen the patient for MRSA. And if we find out the patient is colonized, we actually have mechanisms to decolonize the patient. So presence of colonization in a patient does not negate the fact that you may indeed identify a surgical site infection with that organism in the patient. So which infection should be reported? This is this patient we just talked about. Is it an SSS, superficial incisional primary? SSS, superficial incisional secondary? SSI, deep incisional primary? SSI, deep incisional secondary? Or is this an SSI, IAD, intra-abdominal infection? Voting is open. Go back and kind of read your case if you need to refresh yourself. Everybody voted? Okay, we'll go ahead. 89% of you said the answer is number 3. This is a superficial incisional deep infection, deep incisional primary. 8% of us said it's a superficial incisional primary. And 2% said it's superficial incisional secondary. And 89% of you were correct. This is a deep incisional surgical site infection from the primary site, the major surgical site. Okay. Deep incisional. It must meet the criteria of occurring within 30 days after an operative procedure or within 1 year if an implant is in place and involves the deep soft tissue, and, for example, the fascial and muscle layers. And in this case, the patient meets criterion D, a deep incision spontaneously dehiscid or deliberately opened by a surgeon and is culture positive or not cultured, and the patient has at least one of the following signs or symptoms: fever or localized pain or tenderness. And again, that culture negative finding cannot be met, but in this case we had a culture positive finding. So there's our answer to that question documented. If this is true, what is the date of onset of this infection within NHSN? Okay, this is not a voting question, but just remind you that in NHSN, you can begin counting your SSI by the date of the first positive culture or the date of the first symptom of infection. And in this case, the patient's first symptom of infection was on April 29th. Okay, so we allow either. And here, remember I told you about tables of instruction? Here is the documentation of how you complete this, and there's the information located in tables of instruction that this is what defines the date the first clinical evidence of SSI, when it appeared, or the date the specimen used to make or confirm the diagnosis was collected. Either one is correct. Okay? Case 4. Patient has a total knee replacement, a K-Pro on C-17 at Hospital A. Discharged from Hospital A on C-19. Admitted to Hospital B on C-25 with creolin drainage from the superficial incision. Further investigation concludes this is superficial SSI. Which hospital reports this SSI? And this you can shout out the answer. Hospital A. And what if the SSI becomes apparent 60 days after the procedure? We don't report it, right? Because even if we have an implant in place, a superficial incisional infection is only reported the first 30 days after surgery. So if you have a really great example of a superficial incisional SSI on day 35, I know it's going to really annoy you. You can't count it in NHSN. You may want to report it in your meetings or keep track of it, but within NHSN, we want it only the infections occurring within the first 30 days after surgery. So SSIs are always associated with a particular operative procedure, and in this case, that was hospital A. Superficial incisions are followed for no more than 30 days. Okay. Now, on case 5, our patient was admitted on 9/10 and underwent a hemicolectomy. On 9/13, the patient's temp is up to 37.7 centigrade, has abdominal pain, and the ultrasound shows an abscess along the abdominal wall. On 9/14, IMG of the abdominal wall abscess was performed, and the specimen was collected for culture. Antibiotics were begun. On 9/18, the patient was discharged home on oral antibiotics, and the abscess result is positive for E. coli. What type of SSI does this patient have? This is a voting question. Is it a superficial SSI primary infection? Is it a deep incisional SSI primary? Is this an SSI intra-abdominal infection? Or is this an SSI GI tract infection? Okay. Go ahead, you can talk among yourselves if you want. You can guess. Because sometimes we don't have everything at our fingertips in these questions, so. Okay, I'm getting ready to close the voting, so go ahead and give it your best guess if you don't know. Okay. 83% of you said this is an SSI intra-abdominal infection. That means this is an organ space infection. 12% of you said this is deep incisional primary infection. And 3% of you said this is a superficial incisional infection to the primary site. And the answer is, this is an organ space infection, and the specific site is intra-abdominal. Okay, so we would meet our criteria for organ space, and we go to chapter 17 and look at the definition of intra-abdominal infection. And in this case, the patient's presentation met. So the answer is organ space. An abscess was identified, and evidence of infection involving the organ space was identified on direct exam during re-op by histopathologic or radiologic exam. But we also met IAD criterion 2. The patient has an abscess or other evidence of intra-abdominal infection seen during a surgical operation or histopathological exam. So there is in the SSI, chapter 17, page 322. Okay, so two different criteria need to be met for organ space. And in this case, again, those tables of instructions remind you of this. Specific organ space event types have their own unique criteria which must be met. They are found in chapter 17 of the patient safety component manual. Okay, why not GIT, gastrointestinal tract instead of as a specific site? In this case, the abscess is in the abdominal wall, and GIT definition for HAI focuses on the organs of the GI tract. Therefore, IAD is the appropriate choice for SSI in this case. And let's change the scenario here and say at the time of IMD it was discovered that the patient had suffered an anastomotic leak from which the abscess developed. So we had a leak here. Does this change the determination of whether there's an HAI and it's an SSI intra-abdominal? No. Although an anastomotic leak can be a complication of surgery, the fact remains that this patient meets criterion for SSI. If the surgery had not been done, the patient would not have had the anastomotic leak. So even if you have a complication of surgery and that complication allows you to meet SSI criteria, you do need to use that and count the infection. Okay, we're moving on to case 6. On 122, a patient had an abdominal hysterectomy. On 21, the patient has pelvic pain, temp of 38.4 centigrade. On 22, our MRI reveals an abscess in the deep pelvic tissue. And on 23, the surgeon opens the wound in the OR, drains the abscess. The specimen was sent to the lab, and he or she defines infected hematoma. Antibiotics were begun. On 2-5, the culture is now positive for Pseudomonas aeruginosa. What should be reported? This is a voting question. SSI intra-abdominal infection, SSI OREP, which is other reproductive. This is tricky because you don't have chapter 17 in front of you. SSI endometritis. Okay. What kind of organ space infection would be reported? Okay, let's go ahead and see here. 47% of us said it's IAD. 44% said we have other reproductive. And 8% said endometritis. And the answer is it is other infections of the reproductive tract. So this is a tricky one because we didn't have chapter 17 in front of us. But just reminding you that you do have to go there and look at your criteria. Intra-abdominal is used when the infection is not specified elsewhere. So that's why it's not IAD. And in this case, here's our definition for OREP. The other infections of the male or female reproductive tract, including the deep pelvic tissue. And the patient has an abscess or other evidence of infection of the infected site during a surgical operation. Okay? We're running short of time here, so we're going to get through as many of the cases as we can. The answers, though, will be for all the cases will be provided to you on the website afterwards. Okay, here we have a patient with a two-vessel CABG using the saphenous vein, which was harvested via laparoscope and an internal mammary artery. The ICD-9 codes were assigned and were CBGB and CBGC. This is a bit of a trick question if you haven't done these surgeries within NHSN. What operative procedure code should be entered into NHSN? The answer is CBGB. So if both a CBGB and a CBGC are done at the same time, the coronary artery bypass graft, both surgical procedures should be reported because that's the one that has the donor site. And basically, here's our exception that in our chapter that shows that information for you. So should you report that an endoscope was used, yes or no, in this case? The answer is yes. This is unusual, but obviously, if you're having open-heart surgery, we know that so far we're not able to do that laparoscopically. So when you note endoscope, yes, what we know is you're using the endoscope for your harvest site. And that way, if we end up with an infection with your secondary site, we can identify that it's laparoscopic. Okay? And here's the answer in our tables of instructions again, defining for you this piece of information. In case 7, the patient develops both a leg donor site superficial and a chest superficial incisional infection. Do you count one infection or two? If one, which one? And the answer is you count both. The chest incision will be primary, incisional primary, and the leg incision will also be counted as super SSI superficial incisional secondary. And when you report this, the application will allow you to report both of these. Okay, because there is infection in two different operative sites, then two different SSIs must be reported, but they are attributed to the same surgery, the CBGB, and they will be linked in NHSN. Okay, that will identify that. Case 8, I think maybe this will be our last case. On 5/15, a 45-year-old female undergoes an abdominal hysterectomy and colectomy performed through the same incision. If both of these procedures are in your monthly reporting plan, which one do you enter into NHSM? Both the hys and the colo procedures are entered because they're both being followed in your plan. And remember, those pages that I told you, the notes pages on 9/12 and 9/13 of SSI, these are some of the specific instructions. Okay, so here we go with our notes. Number one, the procedures in more than one operative procedure category are performed during the same trip to the OR. Even performed during the same incision, a denominator procedure form will be completed for both operative procedures. Okay? How are the durations for the individual procedures determined? If more than one NHSN operative procedure is performed during the same incision, record the combined duration of all procedures, which is the time from skin incision to primary closure. Okay? And the patient later on, this patient is still going on here, ends up spiking a temp of 38 degrees centigrade and has abdominal pain and emesis. The ultrasound shows fluid collection in the abdominal cavity. The fluid specimen is obtained by needle aspiration and the culture is positive for enterococcus cesium. Many neutrophils seen. Is this healthcare associated? Yes. Is this an SSI? If it is it a deep incisional primary? Is it deep incisional secondary? Is it SSI organ space, specific site IAD? Or this is an IAD but not an SSI? This is a voting question. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close voting. 84% of you say this is an organ space SSI specific site intra-abdominal. 10% of you say this is an intra-abdominal infection but not an SSI. And a small amount of you answered 1 and 2. And the answer is 3. This is an organ space SSI specific site IAD. And to which procedure is the SSI attributed? To the colon procedure. And that's because since we were unable to identify which procedure was the cause of the infection, we use our NHSN Table 3 Principal Operative Procedure Selection List, and we see that colon surgery is a higher risk surgery than hysterectomy, so we would choose colon when we are reporting the SSI. Okay? I think we're running out of time. We'll just go ahead and close it. And I do want to let you know there's 3 more cases, but the answers and the cases will also be included in your handout that will be posted on the website as well. So thank you for having me. We can take some questions afterwards, but thank you for having me speak on SSI. We'll take a little break and get ready to do CAUTI next. Thank you.